Welcome to the Judaism From Within podcast. My name is Simi Lerner. Over the next 10 or so minutes, we are going to go over an idea from the weekly portion from the perspective of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, a 19th century commentator, philosopher, whose view I particularly love teaching. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy. When one goes through the biblical narrative or the stories of the Bible, certain things spring out as being particularly interesting, and certain things get overlooked because they lack a certain flair. In this week's parasha, Parashas Re'eh, has quite a lot when it comes to its subject matter. The dietary laws, the laws of the festivals, there's what to talk about that you can imagine it grabbing people's imagination. But there's one phrase that really fails to do so. The word tithes, or maaseiros. So depending on your background, either of those two phrases, either tithes or maaseiros, they don't exactly grasp your interest. So while they may seem like an unlikely candidate for deep, foundational, structural messages of Judaism, but maybe, with Rav Hirsch's help, we could change that. It's one of those things that, once we extract ourselves from the historical context of how the Jewish people were living in the land of Israel, we often lose sight of some of the deeper, more foundational messages that were being implanted into the Jewish people, and thereby for future generations. Being a very agricultural people, the idea of how you acted with the produce that you produced was very central to your life, and it had an enormous impact on the life of an agricultural people. So we don't work in the fields now, but the idea that the message is timeless is brought to light by Rav Hirsch. So to formulate our discussion, we will be discussing the three types of maaseiros, the three types of tithes the Jewish people were obligated to bring. We will fit that into a known picture or a known structure. And then, in classic Rav Hirsch style, we will then take it towards the direction of a specific law that almost goes unnoticed, but allows us to firmly fix the message, but also show us how this idea is relevant to our lives today, and how these actions and how these thoughts are also relevant to us, not only in terms of what we can do, but also how we live out other religious duties. Now, that's quite a broad statement, but let's start breaking it down. What are the three types of maaseiros? There was Maaseh Rishon, Maaseh Sheni, and Maaseh Ani. Each one of these tithes symbolized a different aspect of Jewish life, a different pillar, a different foundation of the Jewish worldview. Translated briefly as the first, the second, and the one that was dedicated to the poor. The first one, Maaseh Rishon, was given to the Levium. The Levium, whose job was to educate the Jewish people, to inspire the Jewish people. Now, we've been through this many times before, the idea that the temple was there to inspire and direct the Jewish people towards a certain goal. How the different objects in the tabernacle or in the temple were there to elicit a certain emotion, a certain thought pattern that would lead the Jewish people towards a certain action, towards a certain way of life. And it was the Kohanim's job, the Levium's job, to inspire towards this, to educate towards this. This is what a Jewish person would do when he took a certain amount of his produce and dedicate that towards his spiritual well-being. Now, of course, any image or any picture only comes to light when every component is put into place. For no structure stands on one pillar. The cultivation of his sense of duty, his sense of mission, his sense of meaning, that is the first thing that is cultivated. That without fail, a man takes from his material produce, that which he has worked on, and dedicates it to the recognition of his mission and his duty. But the second one follows closely on the heel of the first, almost as a method of tempering a misguided worldview that can stem from the importance of the spiritual. Yes, the spiritual is essential, and what do we mean by the spiritual in a normative sense of the word? Is what we are here to do, our mission in this world as Jewish people or as human beings, we have a duty to live out a certain moral life and inspire others towards this moral life. And that was the point of the Kohanim. That was their job. They weren't essentially better people. They symbolized an ideal. This, just almost as a side point, we mentioned when we discussed the Kohanim that it wasn't them themselves that were this ennobled state. No, they wore clothes. Clothes that symbolized a certain aspiration, that symbolized a certain peak that man is supposed to strive towards. But these clothes that they wore didn't belong to them. They belonged to the community. And they were only able to serve as Kohanim, as priests, when they were wearing these clothes, to remind them themselves that they were not there yet, but they symbolized what it meant to be there, in their duty as the priests. So we have this idea of the spiritual coming first, but following closely is Maisa Sheni. Maisa Sheni is when a man would take that produce and take it to Jerusalem, and there he would eat it. Yes, the first stage would be the remembrance of one's duty, but an essential message that comes afterwards, a fundamentally Jewish message and a Jewish worldview, is that fulfillment of God's will, a fulfillment of your mission in this world, is not with the spirit alone. The pitfall or the trap many spiritual traditions fall into is looking at this world as almost a necessary evil that we have to endure. Ideally, we would be a spirit, but alas, or nebuch, we are trapped in this body. Following on from our message last week, that acting in this world is what fulfills God's goals, and without our action, those goals would not be fulfilled. The empowerment that that gives man, not only in an abstract way in terms of his mission or his duty, but also in a practical way for how he views the world. This world is the world of action that things can be accomplished, and this is brought to light with Maisa Sheni. He takes that which he works for, he takes that which he has produced, he takes it into the context of the spiritual. He takes this most physical thing, and there he enjoys it. He takes it to Jerusalem, and there he enjoys it. Living out that idea that we mentioned last week in action, the enjoyment of the physical world, the enjoyment, the pleasure that he takes from it, but recognizing that it is in the context of the mission. So to recap our first two, we first have the mission, the duty, or the spiritual and the moral, Maisa Rishayin, the first tithe that's taken. The second one is to stand against this dangerous misconception that the spiritual is all that matters, or the abstract is all that matters. No one takes the most physical thing and brings it into the context of the spiritual, fuses the two together, not as a concession to man's weakness, no, by an essential nature of Judaism, is that these two parts are essential. It's not that one comes at the expense of the other. No, they are both needed. The balancing act is demonstrated by these first two maestros. And you live it out with the promotion and the care of our fellow human being. And like the first two, that they cultivate a certain outlook, this last one cultivates the outlook of how you look at your fellow man. Now this is key, because especially when we generally speaking about people less fortunate than ourselves, or people who are struggling in their material life, in their ability to provide for their families, we look at ourselves as being the benevolent ones, the ones providing for them. This takes that idea, takes that misconception and turns it on its head. From the Jewish standpoint, from the way the Torah invites us to look at those people who aren't as fortunate as you are, it is that you have a duty to them. You have a responsibility to provide for them. Not the classic trope that the poor man embarrassingly seeks out the rich. This tempers the attitude of the wealthy or those who have. Now, of course, not all one's money. That's not the point. The point of this is to foster a certain approach, a way of looking at the world. And Rav Hirsch draws attention to this with his last point. So what we have so far is we have an ancient ritual, an act that we don't do today. We aren't an agricultural people, but we can appreciate how the Torah draws the Jewish people to look at the world along these three planes. And by the simple learning about it, we can gain an appreciation about how we should be directing our minds. Now, how we're supposed to use our material prosperity, our money, our income, was very much trusted to the personal conscience of each individual. And this is almost like a paradigm for how one can look at their religious or moral obligations. The idea that because you could do something, you should do it. Or because you are not forced to do something by way of an obligation and there is a way out, somehow you should take the way out. it was quite easy to put yourself into a position where you were not obligated to bring maaseros or tithes. You could bring the produce into your house in a unique or bizarre way, not through the front door, for example, and thereby you would not be obligated to take 10% from your produce. And this idea that you could easily move yourself into a position that would make you not obligated, that the obligation would not fall upon you, is a good model of how we generally speaking look at our religious or moral obligations. Because when it comes to Judaism, there's no police force. That's not how it works. That's not how you're encouraged along the moral path. An individual's conscience is at the center here. He is trusted to have taken these ideas and developed himself into a type of person. It wasn't so much about doing it, because as I said, you could have got out of it, but it was the idea that it would develop an attitude to how you are supposed to use your money, the care for yourself, the care for your spiritual well-being, as well as the care for other people. It was developing a way of looking at the world. The reason I say this is an interesting model is because often, if you look at the Torah, you can imagine a person being a very, very bad person, can express horrific immorality, but still stay within the framework of the Torah's laws. How he can circumvent what he could get away with, what is possible within the framework of the law, and within the commandment of Maaseros, the very commandment that is designed to develop you into a certain type of person with that which is most valuable to you, that which you've worked so hard for. That is the thing that is used to develop you. That is the thing that is used to develop your perception, to develop the way you look at the world. And that very law, you could very easily put yourself into a position that you weren't obligated. Almost saying that if you are trying to put yourself into a position where you can get out of taking care of these three aspects of your life, you've missed the message of the Torah completely. The Torah can often be translated as simply law, giving the implication that if you tick certain boxes, move in a certain way, act in a certain way, as long as you fit within the framework of the law, you're good, and you're living the Jewish life. But this drains Judaism of all its meaning and all of its motivation in the world. It's not simply ticking boxes, it's also developing you into a certain type of person, allowing the Torah to change who you are as a person. This law of Maaseros demonstrates this beautifully. In almost an ironic twist, the very law that is developing you is the very law that you could get out of. Almost like a signpost to the wedding, the marriage, the connection between action and personal development that Judaism is taking us along, and how both are absolutely central. So to recap, the pillar of the duty and the spiritual well-being, the pillar of the split between this world and the next world, and how both must be embraced in a Jewish worldview. And lastly, we live that out with the care for those who are needy, the care for the other. And then we ended off with the ironic twist that this law specifically has embedded within it, that the very law that is designed to develop us into a certain type of person is the very law that you could get out of, demonstrating to us that the type of person who would get out of this law is the person who hasn't been developed, and the person who has been developed along the lines that Maaseros is inviting us to go along will be the person who will embrace this obligation and enjoy his food and enjoy his prosperity with his spiritual well-being in mind, his physical well-being in mind, but also those who are more needy than himself in mind. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful Shabbos.